everyone, and welcome to episode 572 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Doing well, Seth. I'm happy to report there is no snow over here. It's just
lucky.
I just walk around in my t-shirt. Yeah. I'm like, what's going on?
We got like 18 inches between yesterday and today or something.
What?
Like, yeah, waiting around
is
in
that?
The
Can
snow.
Can you even open
there?
Your door? Is it like the cartoons where you open your door and there's just a human print as you walk through?
almost. Not. It's not, like a couple hours away. It's actually like that. But I could barely like get my car out of the driveway. So like that type of snow. But anyway, we got another hosted Krim. Good morning, Krim. And I'm sorry, Krim. That game, very enjoyable game yesterday. Although brutal that the Broncos couldn't pull it out.
Yeah, they got there. They did pretty good just with the backup, right? But like, I just want to say it was a blast to see how defensive that game was. The snow and all of that was fun for
number
me.
One defender.
I love snow games.
Dude. I cannot tell you how many people texted me to just say, "Yo, this game sucks," and I'm like, "Whoa, hold on, what? This is so defensive. It's so tight, and it's so grindy."
You know,
I
like
love
the third down rollout, just throw it away.
Yeah,
we're not even gonna bother running it.
Don't need
it. It's the control mirror of the NFL, basically. Yeah,
it really was, and I love that.
We got a fun one today. We have some interesting topics. We got new standard. We have a pro tour coming up. We had regional championships this weekend. Turns out that Hasbro and CEO Chris Cox are getting sued. So we wanted to talk about that a little bit and some other smaller topics. So that's what we're getting into today. Before we do, though, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit. And Card Conduit's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use our sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Our show is also brought to you by Heavy Play Advanced Gaming Equipment. The ETB playmat features a unique folding design, allowing to fit it in a standard laptop bag. It's available in a wide variety of colors and also with original art. EquipMag lets you snap all of your gear on your playmat so you can move it around between rounds. Not that you're going to need to, because you're going to be sitting at table one all night. So head over to heavyplay.com/mtggoldfish or use the code mtggoldfish at checkout to save 10% off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic, and let's start with what I think is the most interesting topic of the weekend, Hasbro getting sued. Richard, explain this to me. I've been reading the articles. I know in America you can kind of sue anyone for anything. What's going on here? What is this lawsuit against Chris Cox and Hasbro about?
All right. What was it, like 74 pages?
Oh,
76 page complaint filed in the U.S. District Court of Rhode Island on Wednesday, where the plaintiffs allege CEO Chris Cox mismanaged Magic by overprinting sets, hence devaluing existing sets. Just a bunch of stuff about, like, I guess the relevant ones are, quote, material false and misleading and caused the company substantial harm by causing it to repurchase its own shares at artificially inflated prices. They accused the CEO of using the parachute strategy, which they printed sets to cover shortfalls elsewhere in Hasbro. The toy line is bad, so we'll just print some more Magic the Gathering.
Master set.
Yep. I don't know, guys. Seems very loosey-goosey to me. America's where you can sue for anything. Can you reverse Uno them? Like, if you put a frivolous lawsuit up, can you somehow countersue and just like take them like to the to the house? Like, is there any, like, It seems wrong. Like, I don't know how you're going to be like, oh, yeah, they printed Spider-Man. It was bad. He was trying to ruin the company.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know how you're going to make this argument and have someone say, yeah, it seems like this happened. So I'm not sure how this works. Seth, do you have any idea?
I know. Luckily, I've never been sued. Never had to sue anyone. Yeah. So I don't have any firsthand experience on
good.
That, thankfully.
But you complain on social media. Does this?
I do complain on social media sometimes. I'm curious. Like, I don't really understand. Like, I see what they're saying, but I have a hard time understanding that what they're saying is illegal in some way. Like, what did they actually do wrong here? So they printed too many magic cards, which devalues existing magic cards, which I guess could make, like, this sounds like something Rudy would say from Alpha Investments. Like, the people who are like, we need a second reserve list now. We need a new reserve list because our cards are losing too much value. So I've seen this argument from, like, collectors who would rather have their cards not be reprinted so they maintain more value. But I don't think that's, like, illegal in any way. And even the parachute thing, like, isn't that just, like, a smart business strategy? Like, hey, we're not selling many toys, so let's make another magic set because people actually buy that. That just seems like kind of business 101 to me. So I'm, like, a little confused over what the actual problem is. I guess it's the, like, they ripped us off by buying back their shares at a higher price type of thing. Maybe that's where it becomes illegal. But I think this is probably much ado about nothing for the most part. I would be shocked if this actually led to anything except maybe some bad press. I know their earnings calls coming up on, I think, February 10th. So in a couple of weeks, so this isn't going to be resolved. They're going to get asked about it. So maybe that's the goal, but I can't imagine this. I'm not a lawyer, but I can't imagine this actually winning, I don't think. What do you think, Grim? Have you ever been sued? Ever sued anybody?
You know, thankfully, no, on all ends, because it just seems like a lot of tedious work.
Oh,
a lot of just time, which is why this is really funny to me, because it's like you are essentially, you're going into this knowing that this case that you brought is kind of loose, right? You're probably not going to win this. So just out of pure boredom and whatever, you're just going to sue somebody. And I don't know. This just seems loose. That's all it is, really, without reiterating all the points y'all brought up.
I mean, I think the main point is something like they are selling the long-term success of Hasbro out for short-term gains, and they're doing, like, shady things for it. Like, I think that's, like, the actual leg they're trying to stand on. Now,
what
you're not supposed
do
to do that,
shady?
Right? Because they're... Yeah, right? But, like, you're supposed to have the shareholder interest in mind, right? So that is the illegal part of it. Now, doesn't every company kind of sell out the future for short-term profits while making, you know, loose arguments that it's okay, right? So I don't know. And exactly what is shady, like Krim said, right? Like, isn't the parachute strategy what you're supposed to do? Like, you're not trying to protect the interests of Wizards of the Coast. You're trying to protect the interests of Hasbro. So yeah, print more Wizards of the Coast stuff to make up for your, like, terrible toy line, right? So I don't know. I just need to know who the plaintiffs are and whether they're sweaty Magic players. Because that's what it sounds like. You know what I mean? I'm upset about Magic the Gathering and Universes Beyond. Let's go sue. Like, you know, it makes me feel a lot more assured if they're just, like, random shareholders that have nothing to do with Magic, right? And they're like, yeah, you know, we have the best interest of Hasbro in mind, but, like, these are not the same people that sued to separate Wizards of the Coast, right? Like, this is not...
I do actually kind of agree with what they're saying. Like, I have felt, I've talked about many times about how I feel like Wizards is too focused on the short term, and, like, long term, they might be hurting the game, or things, you know, 5-10 years from now, like, there could be negative consequences for choices being made now, too focused on the next quarter. Like, so I agree with a lot of that stuff. I just have a hard time seeing the illegal part of it. Although I do think one of the most interesting bits of news that came out of this is we found out a little more about 30th anniversary edition. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if you remember 30th anniversary edition with the $250 not tournament legal packs. Yeah, that they announced it. Everyone freaked out. And then they put it up for sale on the Secret Lair website. And it lasted like 33 minutes, I think, before they took it down. And we were all like, what's going on? Like, this isn't selling. Why did they take it down? And they posted a message, Wizards did, that made it sound like kind of tried to make it sound like it sold out, but didn't actually say that. They said it's like, we're no longer selling it or something, some weird phrasing. But it turns out in this lawsuit, they talked to a former Wizards employee. And this is according to the lawsuit, so I can't verify this independently. But Wizards former employee number 6, I think, in the lawsuit said that they actually stopped the sales of 30th Anniversary Edition because apparently the sales weren't going well and because of the pushback from the community. And then they just dumped it all in a landfill in Texas. They just dumped it. All their $250 packs. They're just like, oh, okay, like off to the trash with you.
Doesn't that go against what the lawsuit's trying to prove, though? They're like, yeah, this is going to tank. This is going to suck. Let's protect our interests. Let's protect our company. Let's get rid of it, right? Let's veto this plan. So I'm like, I'm not sure how this furthers the lawsuit, right?
It seems like
we made a poor choice and we fixed it based on feedback. Sue us. Like, what? Like, I'm so confused. But it reminds me of the, remember the Flesh and Blood, like, shredding thing?
Yes.
The controversy. Oh, about that.
There's a dumb Flesh and Blood with tons and tons of 30th anniversary Black Lotus. You just gotta find it.
Yeah, just gotta do some dumpster diving. But, yeah, so it'll be interesting. My expectation is nothing probably comes of this other than maybe some bad press. I would be shocked if like there were actual changes or, Hasbro lost, but.
So the interesting thing is I don't know really anything other than the legal shows I watch, but if this lawsuit proceeds, I'm not sure if it has proceeded or if it could get thrown out at some point. Right. But if it proceeds, there's like the discovery phase where like basically all the emails, internal communications, like all this crap gets dug up and becomes public, right? So even if, you know, the lawsuit doesn't win or we get nothing out of it, you're going to get a lot of dirt like this, you know, 30th anniversary dumpster stuff. So if it proceeds, expect a lot of inside news about some of the previous strategies, right? Like, ooh, you know, here's an email of Mauro saying he's going to lie on his blog and he's going to say this when in fact that was going to happen. Like, because if that's in their emails, it's going to get dug up in the process of discovery and, you know, thrown out here, right? So that can happen, right?
That would be interesting.
So get your popcorn ready.
Maybe we get some info out of it. That'd be interesting. The other thing with all this is, like, we know it's two people that own some amount of shares in Hasbro that are doing this. Maybe they're random Magic players. Maybe they're just random investors that doesn't really specify. But what are the odds that these two random people are actually going to take on this, like, $10 billion corporation in court? Like, isn't that a kind of a foolish lawsuit unless you have very deep pockets? Because won't the billion-dollar company just, like, grind you into the dirt with legal filings and so forth? Like, isn't how this works, basically? Like, there's no point in suing a $10 billion company unless you're a billionaire yourself.
It's a tough one. I don't know how you're going to do it. I mean, I'd love it if if there was like more concrete evidence, right? And again, like, I would have to tap into my like seasons of Better Call Saul and Daredevil. That's the only like lawyering I know, right? Like, so I'm gonna call Jimmy McGill and Kim Wexler on this, and we're gonna see what's gonna happen.
Just one scrappy attorney could do it, guys. We've seen it time and time again. Maybe it's so blatantly illegal that other government factions step in, right? Like at some point, maybe the SEC is like, oh, this is shady, right? We're coming in, right? You know, like I don't know, or maybe this is fine. I have no idea. Like Krim, only TV law applies in my mind. I don't really know what's going on, but it sounds very hard to prove. Whatever this is, it's like you need to prove that they caused harm and it was intentful. And it doesn't look like what other companies are normally doing. You know what I mean? So it's going to be very, you can't be sued for being ineffective at your job, right? It needs to be actually illegal, right? So I don't know. And then given the stock price of Hasbro and how the company's been doing, I'm not even sure you can prove that harm has been done to Hasbro in any way, right? So it's going to be rough. It'll be interesting to see where it goes.
Do you buy the parachute strategy thing? So the argument I saw that they laid out was essentially when Hasbro was struggling, they'd be like, hey, Wizards, make a master set real quick because we need some more money. Do you think that's why? Is that why we had master sets? Do you actually think there's like sets that exist that wouldn't exist otherwise? And they were just like, you know, pooping out these sets to try to bump up the bottom line. Like, I do remember that period of time where we got like some pretty lackluster Masters sets. You remember like 25th Masters and Iconic Masters? There's like this string of like kind of weak Master sets. Do you think it's possible that they actually just put these together purely to try to bump the bottom line?
Isn't that what all products are, to bump the bottom line?
I'm not following, right? Like, yeah, towards the end of each quarter, they try to, like, push something out to bump the numbers for that quarter. It holds that they would do that for the year. Like, isn't this just standard practice? Like,
yeah,
again,
why is that illegal?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a lawyer either.
Like,
I don't know.
This makes sense.
Standard.
If you're trying to break Wizards out of Hasbro, right? You're like, okay, we're gonna sacrifice Wizards of the Coast for the health of Hasbro, and like that's somehow bad. But in this case, if you're just talking about Hasbro as a whole, that's like net good for Hasbro, right? So I don't know what this really is talking about. So I don't know. That's why I feel they're just trying to protect Wizards of the Coast as opposed to Hasbro, but I don't know. Like, yeah. Spider-Man was clearly some weird rush job. Like, you know, is that going to show up? Is that going to show up in here, right? Like, what were the reasons for it? I don't know, right?
Speaking of that, this was on our list, but you made me remember this when you mentioned Spider-Man. I don't know if you saw Gavin did a video. Gavin Verhey from Wizards did a video talking about getting rid of the pre-release promos. He posted a Good Morning Magic going about the pre-release promos. And one of the things they mentioned why they need to get rid of pre-release promos is so they could move sets around. And they had heard feedback from the community that they love that line too, but that the community wanted them to be able to move sets around sometimes. So they need to get rid of pre-release promos, which I imagine has to do with Lauren Eclipse being bumped because it would have had a 2025 stamp and then they bumped it to 2026.
Spider-Man
in 2025. But have you ever heard a Magic player ask for that? Like, I'm in all my years of doing this, I don't think I've ever had a conversation with someone where they're like, you know what Wizards really needs to do is they need to be able to move around the release dates of their sets more. Like, that is what's holding back Magic. Like, is that an actual thing people care about? And do we even want them to be able to move sets around, like pushing Lorwyn back and moving Spider-Man up? Like, is that even good for Magic?
I think what this is for is more so like maybe then like some years aren't like loaded, right, with sets and or loaded with like, you know, more UB than in-universe or in-universe and UB, right? So I think this allows them to move things around, and that's maybe what some people are talking about when they say move sets around. Not like I need you to move Lorwyn back, but like move Lorwyn into a year where there's not as much in-universe.
Mm. Yeah, that could make sense.
Yeah, I think it's true. Just like, no one would ever say that. But like, for example, let's say Star Trek is slated for release whenever it's supposed to be released. And then it's supposed to tie in with the movie. But then the movie is pushed by 6 months. Right.
Yeah.
So
we want
the Magic set to be pushed at the same time. And then therefore something else needs to be pulled up. Mm. Right. So then it'd be weird if your promos didn't have the right promo. Or maybe Marvel Super Heroes was slated to come out right after Spider-Man. But after, you know, the reception of Spider-Man, they're like, hold on, wait, boys, we got to push it back and retool it, right? So it makes sense, but I'm surprised they used the line that, like, you guys asked for it. I'm like, no, we didn't ask for it, really. I mean, yeah, that's probably what we want, but we didn't ask for it, right? Like, yeah, it makes sense, just do it. But, yeah, it's weird. People just want the pre-release promos, and they're trying to, you know, quell the mob, right?
I think that's it. People just, they like their stamp promos pretty much. Anyway, let's move
their
on.
Date
so
stamp
the date stamp.
Not just
Grimm's
the year
still
stamp.
Fighting for the date stamp.
I will die on this hill, dude. I want that dated stamp back.
It also made me wonder, like, if that's the issue. And maybe this wouldn't solve Crim's issue, but couldn't you just stamp it with something else? What if you just stamp pre-release on it or something? That would still make it special, and then you could move a set 3 years in the future and it wouldn't make a difference because it just says pre-release. Like, wouldn't there be a way to solve that issue, the timing issue, without getting rid of the stamp altogether if you wanted to?
I'm going to show you what Pokemon does this, right? So, like, instead you could just replace, Pokemon does this, like, gold stamp on the art, right, of a card. Now, where it says staff on this Feraligatr, it says just straight pre-release. And not a big fan of it. I, 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 It I'm not a big fan of just the pre-release. That feels so, like, I don't know, gunpoint put something on there. Okay, yeah, all right, pre-release. But if you put a time and a date, I think that's pretty cool. Or the one thing that Pokemon does do is that they also put the set stamp, right, like somewhere on there, like a giant blown up name, Temporal Forces, right? Like, I think that's really cool. I think it, and they put the whole set fancy font, like the writing of it. So now imagine if they did that with a magic set, like if they had the Lorwyn key art or promo logo and all of that, like, I think that'd have been really cool.
That would actually look cool if you had like stylized text and then like the set symbol. Yeah. I could see that being pretty cool. But yeah, anyway, it didn't sound like pre-release promos were going to be coming back anytime soon to me. So this is probably all for naught anyway. Speaking of last week's podcast, we talked about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles leaking and how at pre-release, everyone was opening these Turtles cards in their Lorwyn Eclipse packs. And Wizards, I think, did the best thing they could in the situation, which is a few days ago, they're like, these are already all out there. We're just going to officially post them all on our website. So they released every single rare and mythic from the set. I don't know what this is going to mean for spoiler season when we get there. I don't know how you do a spoiler season now. I guess they still said they have the variants and stuff and the lore rarity cards, but I imagine it's not going to be a traditional spoiler season. But at this point, literally everywhere in Mythic from this set is spoiled. What do you think? Was that the right thing to do given the circumstances? Like, what else could they do there, right?
I think that was right. Yeah, right. Like, I mean, like at this point now, no one's going to pretend like, oh my God, there wasn't Ninja Turtles, right? So at this point, I think that was the right play. Just get it out there, get the high-res image so then people don't have to question, because then that opens up like worlds where maybe some people who were bored just decided to publish a bunch of fake Photoshop things and things
we've
like that,
that,
right?
We've seen that in the past.
Yeah. We've seen, like, what was that? That Elish Norn from way back?
Yeah.
In March of the Machines or whatever. So yeah, like at least just now you have some kind of official doc and they did it all in one place. So sure.
Are you hyped for the set now, Richard, that you can see all of it?
No, I figured out, I saw some Reddit comment about like why they're not hyped about Turtles. And I think I'm like most people where it's like I'm only hyped for 90s Turtles. And it reminds me of Pokemon 151, right? Like there are people that love Pokemon, but they're like, yo, only 151, bro. Anything else? I don't know what it is. Give me a Charizard and I'm good to go, right? So I'm like the Nickelodeon stuff. I'm just like, isn't it all Nickelodeon stuff? But like, you know, the CG looking ones.
Yeah.
I need the 90s ones or the original comic ones. Anything beyond that, I'm just like, and I don't know, man. We were just talking before the cast. We looked at the Marvel Super Heroes Commander decks. And I'm looking at the Fantastic Four deck, and I'm like, that looks good, right? I'm like, what's the difference between this and Turtles? I don't know, right? I just don't know. But I look at Turtles, and it's one of my most favorite franchises, and I'm just like, I'm not feeling it. But I'm like, oh, Fantastic Four deck, here we go, right? So I don't really know what is going on here. I wish I could donate my brain to science, Seth, that Wizards can look into this.
Figure out why one universe is beyond resonates and one does not, even
though they're basically the same. I don't know.
Wait, Richard, can you confirm you're the Turtles guy? Is that what that Krang dude is? Like, he looks like a little brain, but with like drill lasers.
Yeah, is that him? That he's just an alien. I don't even know, right? My 90s turtle lore is out of date. But maybe it's because it's like that 90s aesthetic and it no longer holds up. I have no idea what it really is.
I wonder, though, like, do you think that's just because you're a 90s kid? Like, do you think someone who's 20 now is saying exactly the opposite? Like, man, these new Turtles that I grew up with are super cool, but all these 90 ones, if they got those out of the set would be way better. Like, do you think it's just like our a generational thing that like we're nostalgic for it or grew up with it or whatever? Or do you, or maybe that's what really matters?
100%. All Magic players are boomers. You know what I mean? Like, how many Magic players were born in the 2000s? You know, like a handful, right? Everyone else is sitting there grasping their Sarah Angels. Like so I feel we outnumber.
I just got to say, though, like, I think Richard's sentiment and whatnot towards Turtles and how he brought up Pokemon is actually a really reoccurring thing. So many people that are like from the 90s, they're like, I don't want any of the new anything past 151. But as someone who doesn't know anything about turtles but does love Pokemon and hears that from, like, you know, Pokeboomers as well, I'm just like, yo, hold on. Pokemon's new creature designs and ambitions led to some really good stuff. So I don't have that nostalgic lens when it comes to some things. So I am very curious how many people want 90s turtles only.
It's because you're unemployed and you've played every single Pokemon game. Okay? Like, here's the difference. Right? Like, in the 90s, I could spend, like, literally 200 hours playing Pokemon 151. Right? By the time we get, like, 10 generations later, I'm in college. I have, like, 10 hours, maybe 20 hours to throw at the Pokemon franchise, right? So, obviously, my love for it during that time won't be the same as when I had unlimited time, right? And, like, not only did you engage, you literally had nothing going on in your life, right? So, you just thought about it all the time when you're sleeping, when you're awake, whatever.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I do feel the bias to whatever's in your childhood is actually very strong. But, like, also look at popularity of the Turtles franchise or even Pokemon, right? Like, when did they peak in popularity? It's whatever that era is will be the most popular, right? And I think Pokemon Go kind of tells you everything you need to know, right? Where it's like, it's a new game, but it's 151, and it created a worldwide craze. So I don't know, just the old stuff, like, because what do you call it? Where everyone just watches the same thing and plays the same thing, so it has a stronger link. Whereas nowadays, because of social media and the internet and all that stuff, we're much more fragmented. We don't have that shared experience. So I actually do think the old stuff is superior, even if you were born in a newer age, because you just didn't watch the same thing as all your friends, because everyone can go on Netflix or Crunchyroll or whatever, watch whatever they want. But Boomer talk.
Now when that does happen, it's like Jake Paul fighting Mike Tyson or something. That's our shared media experience.
Oh, man. So
that's the one thing everyone watches. I will say I think aesthetics plays into it to some extent, though, because if you go to the Final Fantasy reprint sheet, I'm not a Final Fantasy player, so no nostalgia for me. I thought that the cards that look kind of older looked way better than the new ones. I really hated, like, the Rhystic Study and, like, all just the aesthetic of, like, the newer ones, the Chrome as well, that are kind of like the super CGI computery ones compared to more like the hand-drawn ones. So maybe some of it's actually, like, not 100% nostalgia, even though I bet that's a big part of it. Richard, I have got a question. You mentioned most Magic players are boomers like us. And we were talking before the cast, and I'm going to spring this on you now because I think it's an interesting conversation. Do you think there's new Magic players these days? I know, maybe not. I think it's hot take time.
I made the hot take to Seth that nobody in their right mind would start playing Magic the Gathering today. If you walked into your LGS, okay, and you're like, I want to play a TCG for whatever reason, Magic would be very low down the list, and the only reason you play is because the scenes for the other games don't exist or all your existing friends play. But, like, mechanically, all the new cards are superior, or all the new card games are superior, right? I'm specifically talking about, like, Riftbound. I'm talking about, like, One Piece. Seth loves the mana system, and it's a part of Magic the Gathering, but I have watched so many people, like, just die at pre-release getting mana screwed, right? Okay, I'll mull to 6. I'll mull to 5. I quit this game. This game sucks. And sit there for an hour while the round has to complete, right? Like, it has happened. And, you know, there's some people that, like, soldier through, but you can see the energy from their face is gone, right? Like, they're done, right? They're just here in body. That shouldn't happen.
Does that?
Imagine you open Arena, and then it just slaps you in the face and you got to stand there for an hour. Like, that's what a game of, like, Magic the Gathering is. Like, mull to 5, mull to 4. Oh, a 2-lander. Great curve. Never draw the 3rd land. Fall over and die, right? Like, games like Riftbound don't get this, right? They don't have, so, you don't have this experience whatsoever. So,
it's only us.
So that's see what makes Magic special is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it makes the frustration.
Yes.
The table flipping.
I don't know. I mean, I literally met a new player like this past weekend sitting down. He's like, I just got in through Final Fantasy and I've been playing since. So there's new players. There's a benefit to this land system, right? Because it's something unique. I think it goes into the deck building. Yeah, there's variants, but like, I don't know, Richard. I as someone who also plays Riftbound, there's something very unique
about Magic.
You're going
to sit down and be like, bro, come play this game where you don't get to play half the games, but first, drop $500 on this deck. But wait, Standard sucks.
You don't
play Commander.
Oh,
where there's 400 cards that you do not understand. Even I don't understand it. I've been playing for 25 years, right? Like, or here is a Riftbound. Borrow my Riftbound deck, right? Play.
We have to borrow it because it's like $1 million to build a deck because there's
Let's
no product
be real.
Let's
be real. Who has standard decks? They're borrowing your standard deck as well, Krim.
that's maybe so. Maybe so. But like, I mean, come on, right? Like the lands are a benefit. I feel like this is not a detractor for the game. I think this opens a very fun element, unique element, just like how Riftbound has movement. Right in the game, so I love when there's a unique takeaway from any game I play.
I think what I like about it is like it makes Magic more complex, I would say, than the other games. Like, how much of this is just a simplicity thing? Like, is it because I could see an argument, even as someone who really defends the mana system and thinks that Magic is still like the best game, the best TCG out there. But how much of this is just like it's harder to pick up Magic than other games? I know, like, when you taught me One Piece when we were at Vegas a couple years ago, I felt like because of how the system worked, like you don't have to deal with lands and like and so forth, like it's easier and faster for someone to pick up if you're coming in the dark. So is this just a matter of like simplified Magic is better because it's easier for someone to get started with? Do you think that's like the bottom line of it?
I believe that there's a lot of first-time TCGers. You know what I mean? Like, that are coming in because, like, I love One Piece. Like, the amount of people while playing at One Piece tournaments that are, this is like, oh, this is my first game or a card game, yada, yada, yada. Like, I fully believe that those systems are great for pulling in new players, which will then kind of, like, go down the trajectory that I did with card games, right? Like, oh, Pokemon got me into this, Yu-Gi-Oh! And then eventually I got to Magic, right? So... sure, maybe the bad beats are less when you always have your basic ability to play the game, but I think that once you do want the depth that Magic brings, and there is a depth there, and you can't deny that.
But the depth is just knowing this gigantic card pool of obscure rules, right? It's like the Magic player's dream. Let me demonstrate my superior knowledge of rules by showing you this interaction that you do not understand, and you're going to lose to it, right? But
I've seen tons of people with you guys.
I think Magic is the best game, but that's due to existing player base and history, right? If you were just like pure game mechanics or like pure economy, like, you know, like how accessible it is to get in and play, if your LGS had the same amount of players playing Magic and one of these other games, right, and you were guaranteed these other games were not going to go away and die tomorrow, I would think the other games are superior. But of course, I just made a bunch of assumptions, right? The reason why Magic is superior is these other games can die tomorrow, right? They may make game design mistakes tomorrow, right? So Magic has been around forever, will be around forever, and has this like rich history to tap into, right? But like, let's not pretend we don't make lots of excuses for Magic. Right?
Oh, yeah, you know,
VV Cauldron sucked, but don't worry, Standard's still the best thing to play, right? And then we just don't play this thing for a year. If you played, like, Riftbound and that happened, you would just quit. You know, you would just quit because you don't have 20 years of, like, sunk cost to, like, hold on to, right? So Magic does have that leeway, right?
I do think, now that we're talking about this, I'm actually curious. So let's say Magic was launching today like Riftbound. Like, Magic didn't exist for 30 years. It's just coming out today. Prices are the same. Everything's the same. Would anyone play it? And I think the answer is probably, sadly, not very many people. Like, the price is really high. It's more complicated to pick up than other games. So I think you're right that, like, the history does play a big role in it. And, like, the stability or security, just like knowing that the game's going to exist, because that's always the risk with TCGs, right? There's so many TC, remember MetaZoo a couple years ago? We're going to buy all these MetaZoo cards. And, like, they come and go so quickly that, like, knowing that it's going to stick around, you have, what, Magic, Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, basically, or, like, the old-timers that have been around forever, and you're pretty set on being there. So I do think that's part of it. The other thing I want to ask you, Richard, so when I see games trying to fix Magic, one thing they do is they change the mana system so you can't get mana screwed. But there's one other big thing I think they do, which is they get rid of any instant speed stuff. You can't counterspell stuff. You can't interact or respond on your opponent's turn. You can't, you know, cast instants.
Not Riftbound.
Does Riftbound let you play instant speed?
There are counterspells. But there's like wind at
real counterspells, or these like I put a trap down
without turning
this
into a 45-minute rules discussion. I will say that yes, there is there are counterspells. Yes,
is it like okay? You cast something and I can just counter it, or is there a bunch of hoops you got to jump through? Okay,
it depends, right? Because like the speed of the spell, right? So let's just say there's a thing, a reaction speed, that's like super instant. They treat that as like hyper instant.
They made interrupts. See, they're also interrupts. Yeah. Like the mistakes interrupt. Of it's Magic essentially... from the 90s too.
It's essentially interrupts. To Seth's point, right? Every game that's come out since Magic the Gathering has like copied Magic to some extent, right? Whether they straight out admit it or not, right? They do. But there's one thing that no one ever copies, and it's the drawing lands from deck and, like, having, like, that system. They never copy, right? But instants, milling, rush, haste, you know, trample, like, all that crap is always copied. Not the mana system, right? It's one of those artifacts of old games, you know? Like, you ever play, like, the old RPGs or old fighting games or whatever, and you're like, wow, this is terrible, right? But we loved it back then because that's all we knew. But like game design has progressed since then. Like remember the GoldenEye controls, Seth? Remember when you played with the default control system? You're like, what is this nonsense? But we played with it for so long. It's just we have figured out how to make a control system that's not stupid. But yeah, I don't know, man. Like I'm just saying, it sounds like I'm a Magic hater. I'm not. Magic relies on its history, right? To make up for some of its bad mechanics. And you see Wizards trying to do this way, right? Because the other problem with drawing lands out of your deck is you're drawing half the number of cards, right? So all these other games are high resource games, right? Whereas, like, think Magic the Gathering, but you have a Howling Mine, right? Because you're not drawing lands out of your deck, you're drawing an action spell every turn, you're less likely to have the opposite problem of, like, Flood, where you have nothing to do. And then also these other games have a built-in mana sink, usually, right? Magic the Gathering does not have a built-in mana sink, right? So you can flood out, do nothing, and call it a day. But these other games have like a leader or commander or whatever, and you can sink it. And obviously, it's taken from Magic the Gathering as well, right? But yeah, so I don't know, right? And then the price of Magic the Gathering, playing standard is like...
Yeah, that is a real
issue. It's like rough, right? So yeah, I don't know why we're down this conversation, but...
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, no, you made me think of it when you said
something. If you just made it like pieces of cardboard with no history and just rules text, Magic would not be there, right? But the pieces of cardboard with the rules text matter, right? Which is why I think a lot of people hate Universes Beyond, by the way, because they think... You know, they're destroying the one thing that does matter in Magic the Gathering, which is history and existing player base and the rich lore and all that stuff is kind of being destroyed by Universes Beyond, right? So I'm like, if that's all Magic's got and you're destroying it, what do you have now, right? So I don't know, right?
There actually is an argument to that. At one point, I was like, well, if I just wanted to play other IPs, why wouldn't I just play, was it Weiss Schwartz? Or like, there's other games that actually have been doing this before we started doing Universes Beyond.
The game's bad, right?
But then I just play with Magic rules. I'll throw some lands in. I'll throw some lands in when we play some Magic.
I wish it were that simple. That is not how you fix that terrible game. Let me tell you that.
Speaking of
fixing. It's player-based. There's no players, right? Like, remember when Final Fantasy came out? And then we're like, oh, here's this like random Final Fantasy promo, like $200. It's 10 cents in Final Fantasy TCG. Why don't I just go play Final Fantasy TCG? There's no one playing Final Fantasy TCG, so I can't go play it. But is that really different than trying to play Standard? I don't know, right? Like, you can go play Commander. Can you go play Standard anywhere in your LGS? It's kind of hard, right? But it's player-based, right?
you guys are wild. I still think Magic would do well. Like, what?
Really, do you?
Because
you think if it was launching today, like, no, just launching in the dark. Okay.
this thought experiment is wild because I don't think half of these games that came out exist without Magic. So
that
it's
is
also,
true. Of course,
you know what I mean?
Built upon Magic, right?
It is all built on Magic, right? So you don't get that unless there is Magic. And then to apply the prices, that would mean that there's demand. If the game is unplayable, then there's no high prices, right? So
that's true. You can get MetaZoo cards super cheap now. I'm just saying.
Exactly. You play MetaZoo into the late hours.
It's because,
like,
you know what the difference is? It's because it's all boomers and boomers have money.
Right.
That if you're attracting teenagers, they're like, "Yo, bro, where are we gonna get $500 to build a deck? I can't play this, right?" But boomers is like, "Yeah, my kids have gone to college. You know, I have all this free excess money from when I bought my house like 8,000 years ago, right? So here, I can spend $500 on this deck."
Yeah.
Right? But I do think that economics has something to do with it, right? And then also the newer generation plays online, right? Which is why like something like Hearthstone was a lot more popular, right? Because you get on it free, it's digital, like, free. The idea of sitting there and sleeving and unsleeving cards, like, ugh, who wants to do that, right? So
I will say Magic does do that better than basically all those other games, though, like, as far as digital clients, because a lot of them don't even have one at this point. So I do think that's one place that Magic is kind of winning compared to Riftbound or Lorcana or One Piece or whatever. Because Arena actually is like,
are we
good.
Praising Arena? The one
I mean,
that's
actually,
had the same
yes.
feature set as Beta?
It exists, though. It exists.
It does.
I would
it does take a while to get that
if there was a
list.
Digital client, but we still yeah, cannot spectate, but it technically nope. exists.
Wait, we can't anyway, spectate? Right. Oh, my goodness.
There's no spectator mode, yeah. One last question before we move on to some standard stuff. Richard, I want to ask you this. So if the big problem is the mana system, in your opinion, is that fixable with card design? Because we've seen like MDFCs, we see more like utility lands and so forth. Do we end up in a world 10 years from now where mana through mana flood is not an issue because everyone just plays all MDFC type lands and all your lands are doing something so they actually work like a spell on top of being a land?
Oh, okay. I was actually thinking about this the other day of like how Wizards is fixing this, and this is exactly the problem we have, right? So Wizards has been aggressively printing cards that draw cards, right? And like modal cards that can act as lands and something, right? So the problem with cards that draw cards is you get exponentially ahead if your opponent misses a beat, right? Because like, okay, all your cards cantrip, you can draw more lands, you can play more lands, and you know, that's how you smooth it out. But if you miss a land drop, you are buried in
done.
Card advantage yep. from your opponent and you cannot win anymore. So I do think Wizards is fixing it, right? With all of these, like, so they've done a lot of things, right? So cards that draw cards. So every card has card advantage nowadays, right? Every card has two casting modes, right? Like a lower casting mode, like 2 mana, and a higher one, like 5 mana, to make sure you can keep playing your curve, right? And then also like MDFC type cards, right? And then the alternate casting cost cards too, right? Like cycling, stuff like that, right? All of these are to fix your beloved mana system, right? All of it. And sometimes yeah. it makes it worse, right? Because we're like, wow, you know, I missed my card draw spell. He drew his card draw spell. I'm like tempoed out of the game, right? So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I do think Wizards is actively addressing it, which is why we see power creep, right? I don't know that it fixed it, though, because it does feel super bad when your opponent has monkey and you miss your removal. And then now they're drawing a card, making the mana, and hitting you at the same time. But these are all things to fix the mana system, right? I don't know if you guys agree with me that, but like to me, those are all things they're doing to try to make sure you can hit your land drops, play all your spells, make sure you have a spell to play every turn, regardless of what variance gives you, right?
I agree with you. I think that's we're seeing why every land does like 40 things, right?
Yes.
I know that this will get brought up, but at some point I do remember earlier on thinking, okay, I do like the idea that you can always do something in Magic, but now I'm kind of going back and feeling like, hey, what if you just had the bad beat, you drew a land, and that was that, right? Like I'm kind of like, okay, do we need to always be doing something, right? Like the idea, I feel like, of Companion came from the fact that, well, now, A, Commander's popular, but also it gives you literally something to do always, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of the power crep lands and things like that. And now it's like we had it at a sweet spot, and now we've gone too far over the sweet spot. So I think now we need to dial back. We're doing too much now, right? So I do think that, yeah, like maybe this is a symptom of just them trying to fix the land system. But I still don't think we need to fix the land system. So
I think, like, I also don't think we need to fix the land system, although I do see how it frustrates new players. So if the goal is to bring in new players, I could see, like, the argument for trying to fix it. Or, like, I don't want to replace. I don't want to see Riftbound or Hearthstone Manor or something. But I do think MDFCs and some of those things are, like, a positive way you can minimize the non-games while still, like, keeping the mana system what it is and, like, what makes it great. So I think that those are good attempts. I think that what you said, Richard, I think I mostly agree with that. I do think there's other reasons, too, of, like, printing more card draw. I think Wizards realize that players just, like, having a lot of cards in hand from Commander and so forth, they're like, oh, maybe people should just always have stuff to do. So I think they went that direction, not solely because of the mana base, but I think that is a big reason for it.
Well, the mana base makes you draw half as many cards, right?
Yeah. No, it turn does,
you
unless
draw
you're getting
half
value
a
out
resource
of the lands,
or
but
half a card. Or, like, you know, average, you draw half a resource, half every other card game, you're drawing one card, right? So one weird thing about these newer card games is card draw is as important, but not like Magic the Gathering, right? Like, because you're so high powered. Remember we played Commander with Hearthstone rules and we had card draw on our deck, but we were just discarding every turn, right? Because we're like, oh, yeah, you don't need this much card draw because you effectively have a Howling Mind going on when you don't draw lands out of your deck. So I do think that's part of the same problem, and I kind of agree with Krim. Might as well embrace your strength, right? Like, if your strength is the mana system, let it be, right? Sometimes you just top deck and draw land. That's the point. Yeah. That's how you differentiate yourself, right? If you try to become Riftbound or something, but you're not, right? Because you're just putting a bunch of bandages on, then it kind of, like, doesn't work, right? So might as well embrace your strengths. But I don't know, most people, we're just talking about, like, low scoring football games. Most people don't want this, right? Most people don't want to go into top deck wars by turn four, but we're like, oh, that's great. Right. Hit
that
you with my 2/2
football.
Bear. Right. Like, the boomers, we love it, but I don't know that new players like that either. So I am not sure where you go from there.
I do agree with Krim too, that it went too far a little bit, but go ahead, Krim. Sorry.
It did go a little far, but you know, like, you gotta remember at some point people were conceding to Sphinx's Revelation, right? Like, if that wouldn't happen today, right? Sphinx's Rev is just attached to everything, right?
Yeah, people don't play Sphinx's Rev today. You don't need to.
Also,
like, you don't need to play cards like that because your other stuff just does it naturally. Yeah,
but I also, at the same time, there's a sweet spot. And I think that, like, power creep is not, it's always got this, like, negative connotation associated with it. But, like, I do think that power creep isn't a bad thing either, as long as you do it right.
I mean, some amount of power creep is inevitable, right? And, like,
it is inevitable.
Like, the game is going to get more powerful as it goes along, like, by default. So I think it's not always a bad thing, but I think, like, too much too quickly ends up becoming a bad thing.
Sure.
I think you need to, like, have a slow gradual increase and not, like, these big spikes. I think that's when people start to have issues.
I mean, if it's a gradual curve, sure, but if it's a curve and then boom, like, skyrocketing off into the sun, then sure, that's bad, right? That's what we would call bad power creep.
Yeah.
I swear I like Magic the Gathering, guys, but I gotta point out it's because of the Madison. So here you go. If power creep was applied to both players, no problem. You're just playing at a higher power level, right? But here's the problem, right? In 1994, you miss the land drop. Your opponent plays their curve. They're like this. They're just like a step ahead of you. You draw that land, you catch right back up. 2026, you miss a land drop. Your opponent did this on you, right? You cannot catch up anymore. It is over, right? Like, they snowball out of the game. So the variance causes power creep to be a problem. Like, if both players had the same power creep, it's okay. But because one person is going to miss land drops, is going to not draw their piece or something, the power creep makes it, like, not catch-upable, right? Like, remember the days where your control deck, you miss a land drop or two, it's okay because you're going to sweep them, you're going to catch up in resources, like, it's okay, right? You let that 2-drop hit you 3 times, then Doomblade it, it's okay. You can't do that nowadays. Though. That two drop hits you like twice, you're dead, right? Like you can't have that happen anymore, right?
I mean, you still have that though, right? You still get to sweep them up. And then I don't know. It's just like the sweepers are also hyper efficient now, right? Everything has been power creep, sure. But like, I don't know. It feels like the answers have been there, right? And now we're seeing, like, you know, requiting Hex and all of that. And, like, that card is back and giving us a black one-mana removal spell. Standard feels like it's got powerful spells again.
This is probably going to be way too much for the podcast. But, like, how do you keep doing that, though? Because you can only, like, a spell, it either costs one mana or it goes to free, right? But like a creature, a one mana creature, you can just keep adding stats to that forever. Like it can become a one mana 2/2, then 3/3, then 4/4, then 5/5. How do you keep power creeping the interaction to keep up with that? I don't really see how that's how you do that. Or else you're just making free spells. And then.
Well, Hex shows you that example, right? Okay, well, sure, you have the blight one, but you just gained 2 life. You added gain 2. To your one mana removal. And like, right. You too can, you don't have to reduce the cost. You just need to instead change the effects. It's not just kill a creature, it's kill a creature, gain 2. Kill a creature, I don't know, tap a land or something like that. Tap another, a little.
Blow up a land. Mm.
Blow up a land. Yes. Well, okay, let's not get there yet, okay? But.
We're erasing the history, Krim. Land destruction is coming
shameless
back.
Shameless plug.
Oh, God.
Best standard deck ever. We saw power creep in action, right?
Oh, God.
Into the Flood Maw. One mana. Bounce anything, right? Guaranteed positive exchange in mana. Guaranteed you can't play around it, right? Remember the old days of Magic where you're like, oh, I know you have Doomblade. I'll play a black creature. Or I know you have a sweeper. Let me play a Planeswalker so you can't sweep it. Like, that kind of... interplay doesn't happen because everything removes everything so efficiently, right? So Into the Flood Maw is one of the best answers we've ever made. And the answer is it trades up in mana by being one always, right? Or equal. And it removes everything. So you cannot play around it by playing a different card type, right? Oh, you have removal? I'll play this thing. Well, it still gets bounced by Into the Flood Maw anyway, right? So I don't know. But like Krim said, you can always make it draw a card. It's a cantrip now. Like, I'm sure we're close to Doomblade that cantrips, right? Or Doomblade you know, 2-for-1s, right? Like, the kills one thing and then kills another thing mana value 2 or less, something like that, right? Like, there's all kinds of ways you can power creep it.
I guess that's true.
I don't know. It's still designed that the removal lines up with the threat, right? But what happens when there's a threat and no removal because you didn't draw? Right? You're just gonna get like raffle stomped, right? Like so
in some ways, they're creating another version of non-games by trying to fix the mana base non-games. Like the unintended consequence of trying to fix a mana base is you lead to, and I've experienced this in Standard recently, where you miss like your third land drop and your opponent does not, and you're just like, oh, I might as well just scoop here because there isn't ain't no coming back. Like this game is literally over when I miss my third land drop.
We need a catch up mechanic. We need to pitch cards for mana or something once the game.
isn't that the issue, though? Like, Richard, you didn't experience that with One Piece, and maybe my information's dated from when I played, but, like, it's also a non-game when you sit there and you're just getting 10-mommed, right? Like,
you're so dated yourself, 10-mom.
Yeah. like 10-mom is just, like, this giant threat that comes down, or you have Blue Sanji, right? Or like, because the game, like, of One Piece doesn't have, like, graveyard hate, efficient ones, at least, like, you know, Gecko Moria just coming down and just, like, pooping out a whole board again, right? Like, there's non-games there as well, and I think this is a factor in that, like, you get your resources every turn. Right, there is a thing where you getting your resources every turn that kind of, I don't know, maybe it's because of Magic where it's like, okay, you have an 8-drop, but you have to get to that 8 mana, right? Like that is another thing you have to factor into these things when you're deck building. I know I'm always going to get to like 9-drop Sanji, assuming I don't die to like a rushdown deck. And the only way you stop this is an absurdly unhealthy mechanic leader in like the dude that's Torpor Orb as a leader. But like.
It's Torpor Orb. But here, so One Piece is interesting in that if you miss your resources or you miss like your curve, like, so you always get your curve, but you may not have the card. So on your 5-mana tree, you may not have a 5-drop. But what you can do is take all your Dawn and push the opponent, right? Yeah. So you can push them down to 0 life and change the game, right? And The funny thing is, we're going to get so into the weeds here, but like that's a legit game plan, right? Like you change the way the game plays and the game is suddenly different. Like imagine if suddenly in Magic, you can change all the cards into your hand into shocks and like, you're game plan is not working. I am going to send 5 shocks to your face and hope to draw a ball lightning to kill you. Something like that, right? Like you still have things to do. It may not be optimal, but it could be optimal, and it also changes the way it plays, but you don't just, like, pass. Like, I mean, sometimes it's awkward to pass and be, like, 10K into lead. Like, that's not what you want, right?
Yeah, that's real bad, right?
Like, way less, right, due to the way One Piece draws cards and searchers and all of that. Like, I feel there's way less non-One Piece games than Magic the Gathering. And I do feel the same way about Riftbound, too.
I played many non-games, right? Okay, that's a lie because I did play Sokka, and there were games where I felt like I was dominant, right? Like,
that's different.
It was
That's a meta call, right? That's like bringing your tier 3 deck against a tier 1 deck, right? But like when you're playing both tier 1 decks, it's very rare to have a non-game, right?
But some of the decks that were so busted, okay, like the only ones that I'll give, like, you know, I still laud to this day is like the Law deck. The red-green Law deck, right? That deck cooked, right? That was fun watching. Yeah. And, like, Rebecca was very interesting to play. But I don't know. I feel like there's a lot. There's still non-games across the board, right? It's just, it looks different.
It's a TCG. There's always non-games. Right. But we need a survey. How many non-games in Riftbound? How many non-games in One Piece? How many non-games in Lorcana? I don't think you need non-games. Just you walk away. Are you happy with the result? I think there's different kinds of non-games, right? Yeah.
That is the question I think I would rather people ask themselves. Like, is this a fun take? Did you have fun with the play patterns that you had today? And I think that is really what matters more than like non-games. Because I think the word non-games, every game has non-games. I think Magic's non-games are actually not that bad when you think about like if it's from the land system. I think Riftbound has really good, like, if you have a non-game, like, Riftbound has a killer gameplay there. I think Lorcana is a snore fest for me, but that's because
I've been to many One Piece events. I've been to many Magic the Gathering events. I've played Riftbound a couple times. By far, in personal experience, the amount of frowny faces, in real time, by the way, you can watch your opponent frown, Magic the Gathering. Magic the Gathering, right? Like, they're just like, it's five lands again, bro. And then you're just like, trollolol, here's my 2 drop rare. What you gotta do, right?
I think all TCGs, you have to have non-games, right? Because non-games come from variants, and you need variants for the game to be fun. If you don't want non-games, then you play something like chess, and you're never going to have a non-game, right? Because like, there's no variants involved. So I think every game has to have some amount of non-games. I think the question would just be, do modern TCG players find Mana Screw non-games uniquely frustrating compared to other non-games where, like, in some other games, like Hearthstone non-games, that would be the one I know best because that's the TCG I've played the most outside of Magic, are usually just by random effects happening. Things like a card that can do something that's like a 0 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10, and you don't know until you play the card which effect's going to happen. And if it's a 10 out of 10, there's nothing you do about it and you just lose. If it's a 0 out of 10, you just probably win. So I feel like every game is going to have those, but maybe that kind of variance is less frustrating to like a new TCG player than the I don't get to play my card kind of non-game. So I can't see the argument that maybe like
remember the guy that just shoots one guy at random, it's a little like, you gotta like
Ragnaros.
When it hits the one you want, so variance goes in your favor, you get the highest high, you get the highest dopamine hit. It's like cracking a serialized card. Whereas when your opponent mauls the 4, you don't get that same high, even though it's like effectively the same thing, right? You won the game on variance. Like it's not the same, right? So I do think the RNG aspect of Hearthstone is the dopamine hit, right? Like that's good. Whereas like, obviously if you're playing in a pro tour, your opponent mauls the 5, you're fist bump, you know, you're like, oh, bad beats, bro, but you're like cheering on the side. It's the greatest thing ever, right? But other than that, normally you're like, oh, I actually wanted to play a game of Magic the Gathering, you know, like I didn't watch it on maul the 4. Take one back. It's FNM. Go to 5 only. Go to 5, right? So like, that's the difference. It doesn't feel as good to win like that in Magic, but in other games, it's kind of hilarious, right? It makes those like, you know, Twitch clips moments, right?
But then I think you can't have those moments in Magic as much, because if you add that variance on top of the mana base variance, then it just gets way too out of hand. Like, we've seen that with some random effects in the past where people get salty about it. But, well, this podcast went way off the rails. This is not what we're planning on talking about for a half hour. But I hope it was an interesting conversation.
I swear I like Magic the Gathering, guys. I was playing Lorwyn Eclipse this whole weekend.
I have fun, I promise.
I have fun, but I have fun because I have built 20 years of mental fortitude against Mana Screw. Okay? It's okay.
If you're watching this, let us know. If you play those other games, what do you think about the fun level or the non-game level in Magic compared to Riftbound or One Piece or whatever other games you play? I'm very curious, so let us know that in the comments. One last thing before we wrap things up today. So we didn't get to this, but this weekend, Pro Tour Lorwyn Eclipse is happening. Kicks off Friday, goes to Sunday. It's standard in Lorwyn Eclipse Limited. And I want you guys to give me your prediction. We had a regionals this weekend. Five Badger Mole Cubs in the top. Five Badger Mole Cub decks in the top eight, along with Sultai Reanimator, Boros Dragons, and a Jeskai Control list for Krim. It was a Badger Mole Cub, four color Badger Mole Cub deck that ended up winning the tournament. What's your pick for the Pro Tour? Give me the deck that you think is going to take down Pro Tour Lorwyn Eclipse when it comes up this weekend. Krim, what do you think?
Don't yell at me. I do think it is control, but a part of me wants to play, say, Dimir Midrange. Because I believe. No, okay. Wow. All right. That's a bit. It's a bit. I do think it's Jeskai control. Did you see the new cards, though, from that popped up here from this tournament? There's some sweet stuff at this tournament.
There was some cool stuff. Yeah, in first term in a long time with no Izzet in the top eight, which is kind of refreshing. It feels like it's been a year since we had a top eight without some sort of Izzet deck in there.
Is it washed? I don't know. I mean, like,
it had very bad numbers. Like, it came in as, I can't remember if it was the first or the second most played deck, but then its day two numbers were way worse than day one. So I think at least the lesson deck is trending down a little bit. Richard, do you have a pick for Pro Tour Lorwyn Eclipsed?
I'm gonna go Simic. I think it's gonna be the what's the old card? I can't remember. The Formidable Speaker, right? The one where you pitch and tutor. That's gotta be too good, right? That's gotta be too good. So slot it into some green shell that's like somewhat sane. So like Simic, I think.
I've been seeing people jam Oko in the Simic Ouroboros deck, and I'm like, yo, is Oko back? Because like when I was playing with Oko earlier, it felt really good. But I wasn't sure if that was just me. So I'm glad to see that others are also jamming Oko.
Like right? Old like Oko good is... or just like good. Like broken good or good?
Like, no, not like
No,
playable
okay,
good.
Not Thief of
like
Crowns good.
Playable,
okay.
Yeah, like balanced won't ruin the format good.
Okay.
I mean, for my pick, it's hard to pick against Badger Mole Cub. I'm going to go, though, I think with Sultai Reanimator. I feel like that deck got the most from Lorwyn Eclipse. Like, Formidable Speaker is insane in that deck. I was watching some of the tournament over the weekend. The new Evoke Elementals are really, really good in that deck as well. You can, like, evoke them and then Superior Spider-Man them with colored mana to get their abilities again. You reanimate them. It is a graveyard deck, so maybe, like, people just pack enough hate and it doesn't get through. But I think that deck benefited a ton from Lorwyn Eclipse. So I'm gonna go with Sultai Reanimator, although I wouldn't be surprised to see a Badger Mole Cub deck take you down either. But
it's
anyway.
Not hard to get around all the hate though with Wistfulness now.
Wistfulness helps a ton. And Deceit too. Like you got the Thoughtseize effect, you got the blow up an artifact and enchantment effect. Like, yeah, you get a ton of redundancy with cards that you kind of want in your deck anyway. So I think that deck gained a huge amount, but anyway, I think that brings us to the end of our cast for today. No fish mail this week, but we got to do fish mail again someday. Richard, how do people send in fish mail questions?
All right, hit us up at MTGGoldfish with the hashtag MTGFishMail, and we'll get to your questions on air.
And I believe that brings us to the end of episode 572 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So Richard Grimm, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to our sponsors for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about the Pro Tour and whatever else goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have a spectacular week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.